Case number 20-1447 and 20-1466, FP Development, LLC versus Charter Township of Canton, Michigan. Argument not to exceed 20 minutes to be shared by defendant and amicus, MAP, and 20 minutes for plaintiff. Ms. McLaughlin, you may proceed for the appellant.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Ann McClory McLaughlin appearing for the defendant, appellant, and cross-appellee, Charter Township of Canton. I'm honored to be among the first arguments in this court since in-person matters are taking place again. Since I have amicus counsel arguing with me, I'm going to kind of approach this argument in reverse order, beginning with the arguments or the holdings of the lower court that the lower court got right and that are the subject of the cross appeal. With respect to the Eighth Amendment excessive fines claim by plaintiff in this case, the plaintiff has conflated throughout its submissions the difference between a fine and a fee. And a fee, even as plaintiff acknowledged, is something in exchange for a good or service. The case of this court of Shoemaker versus Howell has recognized that a fee charged by a government agency to perform work that was the responsibility of a property owner to perform can be done appropriately without violating the Constitution. And as the lower court recognized, that type of fee in this instance is remedial, not punitive, and therefore
there could be a criminal aspect to this case, though, right?
There could be.
Is there anything more that would have to be done other than sending that notice of violation? Like, is there some kind of indictment or something else that has to happen?
A citation, a formal citation to with an appearance in court.
Okay, and that hasn't happened?
Correct.
That didn't happen. Okay.
Correct.
Did that happen to the neighbor?
No. The township filed a nuisance abatement lawsuit in the local circuit court against the neighbor in lieu of proceeding on a criminal violation.
Has there ever been a criminal prosecution for violation of this ordinance?
I don't believe so, but I haven't been the township's attorney for decades, so I can't say for sure, but I don't believe so.
Okay. But there would be another step. So there would be another step that would be required.
There would be another step that would be required, and the penalty is a $500 fine. It's not payment of the tree fund fees.
Oh, so that violation itself wouldn't involve any of the replacement costs or any of that. That's just civil, separate civil side?
Correct.
And is it the prosecutor that just decides whether to do that or not?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. With respect to the Fourth Amendment argument, we believe that the lower court also correctly ruled that the Fourth Amendment did not apply in this case. While the court focused on the open fields doctrine, which plaintiff says is a applies only to searches under the Fourth Amendment, the court did recognize that it applies to the people's right to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. And all of the cases on which plaintiff relies to reach an argument that the Fourth Amendment was violated here involve residences. Severance versus Patterson, Presley versus Charlottesville, Soldall versus Cook County all involve an easement, a public use of a trail on the plaintiff's property, or the wholesale removal and relocation of a mobile home from the plaintiff's property in the Soldall case. With respect to the Fifth Amendment arguments or holdings that the lower court got right, Loretto is wholly different despite plaintiff's attempts to analogize the two cases. In that case, a foreign object, a cable box, was required to be placed on the plaintiff's property and remain there. Plaintiff has...
Well, here they are required to plant a tree. Isn't that an invasion of the property?
No, it isn't, because it is just simply replacing what was already there, and to replace the loss or to mitigate the loss occasioned by the removal of a tree. The township planner testified.
But why would that be? Why is that not an invasion? Just
it's simply a mitigation of the removal of the tree and the loss of the benefits that the trees occasion.
So any regulation that was under the guise of a replacement would be okay? I mean, wouldn't be an invasion?
Well, I don't think in every single case, but in this particular case, we're talking about preservation of natural resources, which under Michigan law, especially the Michigan Zoning Enabling Act, are well within the province of local government.
So in Loretto, if the ordinance had required that they replace a cable on the property, that would not be an invasion because it would be mitigation?
A cable?
It was a cable case, right? Wasn't there a cable in Loretto?
In Loretto, yes.
Yeah. So if the law had said you need to replace a cable on your property with another cable from another company or wherever, that would be mitigation also.
Well, but not in the same circumstance. That's requiring something to be added to the property that isn't naturally there, and that's something I think that's a
qualitative. So the distinction is it's something natural to the property.
Yes, I believe so. As I began to say earlier, the township planner testified that the township does not tell property owners how to manage their property. They give them choices, and that's a recognition of the limitations that the Constitution requires. They don't say, you have to remove that tree or you can't remove that tree. Plaintiff has characterized this ordinance as a ban on tree removal, which is clearly not the case. Trees are permitted to be removed, but there are requirements in getting the permit that that attend it under the ordinance. And with respect to Horn versus Department of Agriculture, In that case, the Department of Agriculture required the plaintiff to set aside a specific number of or specific percentage of its crops, and it had no access to it and no ability to sell it or take any other measures that it wanted. It was physically taken by the government. That is the thread, the common thread that runs through all of these cases where takings or seizures have been found. The government has exercised an interest in the property at issue there, whether it's an easement, a possessory interest, ownership interest, dedication, or impairing the owner's right to exclude. That clearly did not happen in this instance. Now turning to the matters that the district court, we feel, erred, it correctly ruled that the Penn Central regulatory taking test applied, but improperly applied it, especially with respect to the economic impact and reasonable investment-backed expectations factors by not reviewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party. It simply accepted the plaintiff's evidence without any critical eye towards what was really happening. And in that regard, the plaintiff did not carry its burden, and the court should have, under that particular standard of review, the court should have ruled in favor of the township on that issue.
Is there any evidence in the record of the current value of the property, any sort of an appraisal? Do we have a sense for what the property was worth before trees were removed as opposed to what the property was worth after?
No.
Does that make a difference at all in terms of arguments?
Well, I think it does, because you have to compare what was taken. If it's a matter of the value of the property before and after the tree removal, or even the value of the trees themselves, there's nothing in the record. Plaintiff did not supply any. There's nothing at the time of that the lawsuit was filed, and nothing at the time that the district court made its ruling in this case.
What about the value of the trees that are removed, the impact?
Well,
my understanding is you're using figures from 2006. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And this occurred, this valuation occurred in 2018?
Yes.
What accounts, was there any anything, any accounting for the fact that there's a 12-year difference in when the valuation occurred and when the alleged taking occurred, to know that even approximate what the value is today.
And I think that the value today would be significantly higher. Trees are
is there anything
extremely
in the record,
expensive.
Is there anything in the record to that effect?
No. Not that I'm aware of. Nobody came in with any type of evaluation other than that.
So what is your position as to the timing of evaluation? When should that occur? Should we have any kind of a reasonableness as far as the timing approximating when the fine is imposed?
Well, the schedule that is adopted by the township is periodically reviewed. So whatever the schedule is at the time of the the tree replacement or removal should be the value that is assigned at that time. I have one more point to make, if I may.
You can do it quickly.
Thank you. I also would like to point out that the government action in this case under the Penn Central test was disregarded with respect to the Lingle case. This was not a physical invasion, but was simply a balancing of interests for the common good, and the average reciprocity of advantage that applies to all properties in the township. I will leave the court with one last point, and that is
a question. I'm curious about on the Penn Central. What relief are you asking for? Are you asking for a remand because there are material issues of fact on the value in this, or are you asking for judgment in your favor?
Well, either a judgment in our favor or a remand for the district court to enter judgment in our favor.
Okay, but not a trial on Penn Central?
No, I don't think it's necessary because I don't think the plaintiff
carried its burden.
Carried their burden. My amicus counsel will address the Nolan and Dolan arguments that I would like to present, but now I'm out of time.
Okay. Thank you. I do have one question before you sit down. Will you be addressing ripeness issue at all, or Mr. Norton, or is that not
because
be?
Of our because of our time, we okay. chose to focus okay. on the merits of the okay. constitutional claims.
Okay, that's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Richard Norton. I'm representing the Michigan Association of Planning and the Michigan Environmental Council as amicus. Virtually every state and local land use regulatory program in the United States includes enforcement and review provisions that could easily be characterized as permitting requirements, and virtually all of those include conditions that could easily be characterized as actions or mitigation requirements.
Do you happen to know, I'm curious, when appraisers do valuations of parcels of land like this, just generally, do they value the trees as kind of the timber value or whatever, or do they assume that it's the land is just going to stay the way it is, or how do they do that generally?
I imagine it depends on the purpose for the evaluation. Trees are certainly valued as part of a piece of property if, for example, there's a condemnation action where the government is taking the trees, and the value of those trees are folded into the assessment, both on the timber value, but I was going to raise the point, reviewing the ecological and professional literatures on tree valuation processes and mitigations demonstrates that the values of trees, taking all of the values they provide both to the property owner and to the larger community, easily can get to multiple thousands to multiple tens of thousands of dollars in values per tree. The valuation that the township is using, the $300 per tree, is not that evaluation of the total benefits that the trees provide. It's the replacement cost to bring in a small nursery tree to replace a mature tree. So it's kind of an apples and oranges comparison in that sense. And if the township were to value trees according to all of the benefits they can provide, according to best professional current practice, they probably could be assessing much larger fees than they currently are for the replacement costs. Did that answer your question?
Because the timber value of an individual tree maybe is more likely more
quite
than
a bit,
the replacement.
More than $300, yeah. I believe so, sir. Did that answer
yeah.
your question?
No.
I was trying to get to the The plaintiffs here are attempting to extend Nolan and Dolan heightened judicial scrutiny to virtually every state and local land use regulatory program. They're doing that by a very loose definition of what constitutes an exaction, by relying on a single statement drawn from the middle of the Kuntz decision, by pointing to a single Texas Court of Appeals decision that was purporting to interpret federal law that clearly got it wrong, and by ignoring the court's own statements in Nolan and Dolan and Del Monte Dunes and Legal and even Kuntz, and persuasive authority from decisions handed down by the 2nd, 4th, 5th, 9th, 10th, and federal circuits that all make it clear that Nolan and Dolan analysis only applies when the government is demanding an easement or possessory property interest through the dedication, through the conveyance and dedication of those interests. If the government demand is anything else, then only Penn Central applies. Kuntz was a decision that was focusing on the question of whether or not a requirement or a provision for...
Are you saying, by the way, that just categorically there cannot be legislative exactions?
Honestly, I don't know that this distinction that has been drawn or been attempted to draw between legislative versus adjudicatory decisions makes much sense, because even legislative decisions that include provisions for the enforcement of the act you can characterize as adjudicatory. So I'm not going to that distinction. I'm drawing the distinction that the Supreme Court has consistently drawn, which is the difference between a demand for a physical invasion, an ouster, the taking the physical possessory interest of the property, versus a regulation that attempts to balance the benefit and burdens. Here, the court has been clear.
Isn't there a demand here for physical invasion? There's the demand to plant a tree.
Maintaining trees is much more akin to requirements that a property owner maintain conditions in the natural conditions on a site because of the benefit it provides. Natural conditions that existed that are providing benefits both to the property owner and to the larger community. It's not the same thing as demanding that a property owner allow the invasion of something like a physical cable that's in no way serving the interests of the property owner itself.
What if it were a demand to put up a fence around the property? Could that be some sort of an exaction if you got a fine for not putting the fence up?
I would have a hard time. If you're putting up a fence, you're not, presumably you're putting a fence to keep people out. You're not doing it as a way to allow people onto the property.
Say you're in a horse community, a horse farm, you want to have horse fences around all of this property. The local government wants that. Could they just say, put up this fence on your property? If you don't, we're going to fine you.
Well, in that case, putting up a fence is also providing direct benefit to the property owner by maintaining the horses within the
property. So you would contend in that instance the government could require someone to build a fence on their property and they wouldn't have to, there'd be no exaction there.
That would not trigger Nolan and Dolan review because it would not be a demand for an easement or other possessory interest in the property.
So they could demand the property owner put anything on their property under your reading of Nolan Dolan, and there would be no constitutional violation imposing a fine for not doing it.
The Loretto Court made clear in its decision that it typically is not uncommon for governments to require that property owners put in things like fire sprinklers or other kinds of activities to maintain the property in a safe condition, safe for the community, that benefit both the property owner and the larger community. And the Loretto Court made clear those are not the kinds of dedication requirements that Loretto speaks to, that a physical invasion speaks to. The kinds of physical invasion requirements they speak to is a demand for an easement or possessory interest where the government takes control and manages and holds on to the property to the exclusion of the property owner. That's not what the Canton Township Ordinance is doing here. The application of Dolan to this case was inapt. That ruling by the trial court should be reversed and dismissed. That's the primary argument I want to make. Arguendo, in my last 20 seconds, if you decide that Dolan applies, I will just assert that the remedy that the township provides for the mitigation of our trees is exactly the kind of roughly proportional level of mitigation that is widely accepted as reasonable, and in fact, it's the most commonly used approach for mitigating damage from the loss of trees throughout the country. So It's just untenable and unreasonable to expect the kind of tree-specific environmental impact assessment cost-benefit analysis that plaintiff is urging on this court. That's the kind of test the court expressly rejected in its Dolan decision. I'm out of time. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Norton.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please this court. The district court rightly held that the ordinance at issue in this case creates an unconstitutional exaction under Dolan and an unconstitutional taking under Penn Central. I'd like to start today with the exactions claim, because regardless what else may be disputed in this case, the parties agreed that at some point the tree ordinance requires mitigation for the use of private property. Now, I'd like to start where opposing counsel finished off, which is whether or not the mitigation required in this case is an exaction. The easiest way to resolve this issue is to look at the two mitigation options that were put forward in Kuntz and held to be an exaction in that case, because they are almost indistinguishable from what the tree ordinance demands. In Kuntz, the property owner had two options. He could leave a certain percentage of the wetlands on his property, or he could pay into a fund for wetland-related projects elsewhere in the city. That is exactly what the tree ordinance demands here. It requires FP to leave a certain percentage of trees on his property or pay into a tree fund for tree-related projects elsewhere in the township. That is an exaction, and it's subject to the rough proportionality analysis of Dolan. Now, in Dolan, the United States Supreme Court held that mitigation...
Is Kuntz... I guess I'm curious about this distinction between a demand for kind of an easement or physical possession versus, you know, a regulation that is kind of in the common good or whatever it is.
Right.
I guess what is your response to that? I mean, is Kuntz the response to that argument, or is there something?
I think Kuntz is the easiest way to respond to that, because the mitigation demanded in that case was indistinguishable from the mitigation demanded here. And interestingly enough, Justice Kagan in dissent made the exact same argument that they're making here. The Nolan-Dolan only applies to demands for an easement or title to property, and it didn't apply to monetary exactions or, in that case, requiring them to leave certain wetlands on the property, she said, would not have been an exaction either. And the majority did not adopt that approach. In fact, it rejected it. And it said any interest in property, the majority opinion held, any interest in property that's demanded would be an exaction subject to Nolan and Dolan. So Kuntz is the best way to attack that argument. Again, under Dolan, there are three criteria that any mitigation must meet. It has to target a legitimate government interest. It has to be roughly proportional to that interest. And most importantly, when engaged in the rough proportionality analysis, the government must engage in an individualized, quantifiable assessment of impact. And that's directly taken from the text of Dolan itself. And here the district court, right?
Let me ask you this. Do you understand the district court's ruling on this point? Was the court doing a facial invalidity, or was he saying as applied?
Your Honor, he struck the ordinance down with regard to Dolan on its face, because he noted in the opinion that there were no circumstances where this sort of non-site-specific assessment would have taken place. The ordinance mandates on its face a tree-for-tree approach, and he held that violates Dolan in every instance.
What about this 25% safe harbor for at least some of the trees?
I think, again, that comes back to Kuntz. In Kuntz, there was an exemption for a certain percentage of the property he could develop. It wasn't the entire property that he couldn't develop. The same is true here. In the Miramar case out of Texas, there were potential offsets in that case as well, and that didn't stop the court from applying Dolan. Whenever the government demands mitigation, that mitigation has to meet the three criteria in Dolan. And the district court rightly recognized that it fails the third criteria of Dolan in this case, because it is not based on a site-specific analysis of impact. The tree ordinance makes clear on its face that removal is based solely on the number and size of trees, regardless of the impact. And that's confirmed by 5A.08 of the ordinance itself.
So what would that look like? What would a constitutional regulation look like here?
it would require some assessment. For example, if you look at the interests that they say that the ordinance serves, for example, flood mitigation, heat shielding, you would do some sort of site-specific analysis to see what the externalities created by tree removal are. Because that's what the impact is under the Dolan analysis. You're trying to require property owners to internalize the externalities of their property use, the harm created by the property. And as Canton admitted below,
can't they make a broader-based argument? Or I mean, look, we like trees. It's not just for floods. It's not just for, you know, noise mitigation. Whatever it is, it's we don't want parking lots everywhere. Whatever. I don't know. I mean, do they have to have some safety valve proportionality where they would say, okay, it's not every tree, but it's effectively going to be, we want to replace every tree?
Well, they have to do some assessment of the impact. It can't be just a generalized interest in trees themselves, because if that were the case, they could have a generalized interest in open space or a generalized interest in grass. And then anything that you developed on that property, they could require you to offset the exact square footage of any home you built, the exact square footage of any driveway you built, and provide that back to the government. In fact, under that standard, the easements demanded in Dolan and Nolan would have been constitutional, because the narrow strip of property demanded in Dolan, the bike path, was certainly more narrow than the development that the property owner wanted to build in that case. So it would have been roughly proportional by definition if the government interest were simply open space or grass or trees. Mitigation is permissible, as the court explained in Kuntz, solely to mitigate traditional externalities, traditional harm that's doled out to the properties adjacent to that property or to the township in general. And that's because under Dolan, the reason that exactions are unconstitutional is because when the government demands substantially more in mitigation than the actual externalities created by the property use itself, it's no longer demanding mitigation at all. It's demanding that a private property owner provide a public benefit without compensation. And that is a taking, and that's unconstitutional, and that is the core of Nolan, Dolan, and Kuntz. And as we said here, this ordinance, it's not just that they didn't do any individualized assessment of that impact here. This ordinance forbids that impact. The text of the ordinance itself sets mitigation based solely on the number and size of trees removed. That's confirmed by both of Canton's designated witnesses, and it's confirmed by the tree count that they did in this case. The tree count they did in this case engaged in no individualized assessment of the impact. Now, Canton has noted elsewhere that they do an individualized assessment as to whether or not they're going to allow tree removal at all. But if you look at 5A.8 of the ordinance, mitigation is based solely on the number and size of trees removed, regardless
of
impact.
You indicated this was a facial challenge. Did you also have an as-applied challenge?
We did, Your Honor, and the court didn't actually have to reach the as-applied challenge here, because on its face, the ordinance doesn't permit any individualized assessment.
If we were to disagree on your facial challenge, would you argue that a remedy here for an as-applied challenge would be a remand for more individualized assessment of this property? I mean, the question is, I guess I'm getting at, is a remedy here simply that the government needs to do a more rigorous analysis of this particular property to determine what the impact is? And then, you know, the fine could be adjusted accordingly.
They can't engage in that analysis under the ordinance. We actually asked this extensively at deposition. It is actually impossible under their ordinance for them to do any sort of site-specific analysis. We went through this at great length with Jeff Goulet in his deposition, and he says it doesn't matter if it increases flooding or decreases flooding. It doesn't matter if the tree is beautiful or if the tree is ugly. It doesn't matter if it's on a hill or in a valley. The mitigation amounts are set on the face of the ordinance no matter what. And that matters because, as the district court rightly recognized, the impacts of tree removal can vary greatly based on these sorts of site-specific factors. In fact, in this case,
does the plaintiff have a burden to show at least some initial showing of what the impact is on their property for, I guess, for the as-applied part of this?
Well, I think that here the impact is clear. The penalties under this ordinance, the mitigation was $48,000 worth of mitigation payments.
But is that, do you have to show that that's a certain proportion of the land or versus the value of the land? I mean, does any of the Penn, whatever would have been the first prong of Penn Central, matter with regard to the Nolan Dolan?
It does not, Your Honor. The way that Dolan works is once there has been an exaction, then it switches to the government to show rough proportionality, right? And we just refute.
So then it would be their burden to in an as applied. I take it the difference with the facial challenge is just since there's no mechanism to actually do this proportionality analysis on a site specific basis,
right?
It fails.
That's correct.
If it were as applied, then I take it the burden would be on the government to show that it is roughly proportional.
Right. They would have to make an argument as to proportionality. And they can't do that in this case. Because in this case, as we noted before, that the externalities created by this removal to abate flooding likely produce positive externalities for the neighbors. They certainly don't produce $48,000 worth of damage to neighboring properties. Indeed, Lee Thurston, their designated witness, testified that there was no evidence that there was any negative externality created by this tree removal. So just based on their sworn testimony in this case, the mitigation in this case should be zero if it were an as-applied challenge. But this fails, of course, on its face. I'd like to touch just a moment. It was brought up just briefly in that they've conceded here that the legislative versus administrative exactions question doesn't, they're not raising that here. It was touched on in the briefing, and I'd like to touch on it very briefly here. As we note in the brief, neither this court nor the Supreme Court has ever found that distinction to be meaningful. And that's with good reason, because, again, the reason that mitigation is unconstitutional, exactions are unconstitutional, is not because the government agents were wearing their city council hat versus their administrative agency hat when they demanded an exaction. It's because if you demand more than the externalities require, you're no longer demanding mitigation at all. You're demanding a public benefit. With my remaining time, I'd like to touch very briefly on the Penn Central test. The district court faithfully applied the three Penn Central factors as written. Canton does not like the outcome, so it's effectively asked this court to rewrite the Penn Central test. First, with regard to the economic impact in this case. The economic impact of removing a narrow strip of blighted vegetation in this case was $48,000. The district court rightly recognized that if you apply that to the property as a whole, it would be hundreds of thousands of dollars in mitigation payments, a number that Canton has not disputed. To say that that is not a significant economic impact, the term used in Penn Central, would deprive those terms of meaning. Canton says that you need now a requirement for an assessment.
Is that the way we look at it, though? I guess you would just look at the plot of land and say if the ordinance applied to the entire property, i.e., the property owner removed all of the trees, and then he would have to pay a replacement fee for all of them. Is that the way we should look at that first prong?
I think you would look at, when you have an ordinance where the mitigation is preset as it is here, I think you would look at what it would cost to develop this property or what it would cost, what the application of the ordinance to the property is. Because the question is not the value of the property with or without the trees. The question is the value of the property with or without the ordinance. And the impact of the ordinance on the property as a whole, which is how you do takings analysis, is upwards of hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the fact that there hasn't been an appraisal of the property since then is not really the question here, because that would only be relevant if you had to determine whether or not there was any value left in the property at all. And that's the Lucas test. And Penn Central only applies where Lucas does not. And this is a Penn Central case. Second, with regard to the reasonable investment-backed expectations, my client purchased this property as a replacement property for a fully developed industrially zoned property that he sold at Canton's urging. He had a reasonable expectation that he would be able to develop and maintain this property without suffering ruinous penalties.
Well, the ordinance was in effect when he bought the property, wasn't it?
That is correct, Your Honor. But the ordinance was also in effect when the purchase took place in Palazzolo as well. And the Supreme Court held that that does not preclude a Penn Central takings claim. The existence of an unreasonable ordinance does not undermine a reasonable expectation that you can develop property without suffering ruinous penalties. And that's what's at issue here. And there's no way to apply Canton's test without undermining the Supreme Court's judgment in Palazzolo. There's not a workable way to split the difference there.
Is there anything in the record with respect to your client's development plans? Does that make a difference at all? Of course, as Judge Bush notes, the ordinance was in effect when he purchased the property. Is there anything that shows, would indicate that he had plan A, plan B in terms of expanding his sign business or whatever?
From his testimony in the record, and I apologize that I don't have the Penn site directly in front of me, but from his testimony in the record, I see that I'm out of time.
You may answer.
Yes. From his testimony in the record, he had plans to expand expand his sign company onto that property. An actual footprint hasn't been put forward because in this case, he was simply trying to get the property to stop flooding. And that's what triggered it here. He wasn't far enough along to have a site plan where he wanted to show how much he was going to develop.
Did he testify that he had received any assurance about the land that, hey, you did us a favor in helping us retain these jobs for Cisco, wherever it was. Thanks. Why don't you acquire this property and you'll be able to use it for, you know, whatever you want. Don't worry about the trees. I don't
know. No, there was never a don't worry about the trees. And there is some you know, question as to how well my client actually understood the scope of the ordinance. I think that he had a reasonable expectation. Since this was part of the three-way deal as a replacement property, that it's industrially zoned. I don't think Mr. Paulson ever believed that the penalties would be this high, which is why we ended up in litigation. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Ilya Shapiro, and I represent the Cato Institute as amicus curiae. Mr. Weldon ably presented the exaction and regulatory takings points. My further argument here offers an alternate and, I think, cleaner rule of decision that avoids multi-factor tests, and that's that Canton's ordinance is a per se taking of several fundamental attributes of ownership, like the right to use, to transform, to alienate. It's a per se taking under Loretto because it mandates the occupations of FP's property by unwanted objects, trees. Like the pre-existing cable box in Loretto, the tree ordinance also mandates a physical occupation. And while the district court below held that Loretto claims are limited to occupations by government agents, Loretto itself did not involve government agents. And the ordinance is also a per se taking under Horn, which held that a regulation forcing raisin farmers to set aside part of their crop or pay the government its market value granted the government constructive possession of the raisins.
Why is so on the Horn question, I'm wondering, I mean, there seems to be a difference between trees as part of the land versus, say, cut trees that are timber. I mean, why aren't the raisins like cut trees, lumber? Okay, you can't take that. But why just sitting on as part of the real property, why does Horn apply in that situation?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think Horn turned on whether the business was growing the crop at issue. I mean, I don't think Canton's ordinance would be any less of a taking if it was a lumber business and they were taking or constructively possessing the lumber rather than trees that were not central to the sign business that FP Development actually has. The point is, Canton prevents FP from using, transforming, alienating, in this case, curing what otherwise would be a nuisance. After all, FP asked the township to help prevent flooding and clear the longstanding drainage ditch, and they declined. And so, in effect, FP was clearing the nuisance, preventing the nuisance. And so the operation of the ordinance to constructively possess and prevent that sort of action is a per se taking that can't be justified under the traditional kind of police power to regulate for the health and safety, to prevent nuisances, whether directly or in anticipation, like fire remedies that Mr. Norton mentioned. The district court distinguished Horn because the government there could take actual title to the raisins. But the Supreme Court focused, again, on constructive possession, not title transfer or even physical possession. The Horns themselves, maybe in other raisin farmer incidents, there was physical possession by the government or title transfer, but the Horns themselves maintained both physical possession and title to the raisins at issue. And all of these cases built on earlier ones that presumed that each fundamental attribute of ownership in the proverbial bundle of property rights deserves a heightened level of protection. In Michigan in particular, trees are a separate interest. And each separate interest in that bundle of sticks is subject to takings analysis, with the exception, as I alluded to, of nuisance regulations, which aren't really exceptions but explanations of when government interference really isn't government interference. At the end of the day,
I guess I'm a little worried about the rule that you're asking for. I mean, it really would stop a lot of, or not stop, but it would adjust the expectations and adjust the way that we think about government regulations of land or buildings, for example. You must have this, you code violations or code requirements. And if you're saying, well, the government is in effect taking possession of something or forcing you, you know, it's, I mean, and maybe that is the natural kind of evolution of Loretto, but it does kind of concern me a little bit.
Well, going back to Mugler in the 1880s, the Supreme Court has held that these kind of normal police power, health and safety regulations don't constitute takings, in part because they apply equally to everyone for everyone's equal benefit. Here, the ordinance specifically exempts certain kinds of businesses, certain kinds of property, so there's a disproportionate burden on FP and others. And the benefit, the...
So it's just a distinction that if I'm required to put a fire escape or something in a building, we can all agree that that's a health and safety requirement, not a taking, maybe whatever. But trees just don't fall, that a conservation ordinance, whatever it is, just doesn't fall into that same justification category.
I see my time's up. Can I answer?
Yes, you may.
It depends on the extent of the regulation. You could get into a Penn Central regulatory takings claim if the regulation is so onerous. But the point is, if, let's say, a regulation applied equally to everyone, that 20% of your property had to be given to the government for some reason, even if that was for the common good, for the public good equally, just because something is for the common good, that's still subject to the takings analysis unless it's nuisance abatement or one of these other traditional uses of the police power. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Ms. McLaughlin.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to respond to Mr. Weldon's argument about Kuntz. Kuntz was a demand for an easement. And in that case, Justice Alito said that fees in lieu of a dedication could be a monetary exaction. But he didn't make a categorical statement that any fees coming to a municipality or local government in abatement of a or mitigation of this type of natural resource removal would be an exaction. And he rejected Justice Kagan's dissent, not because he was trying to expand the Nolan and Dolan analysis, but because he wasn't trying to expand that analysis. The ordinance clearly does also provide for rough proportionality and an individualized assessment. Section 5A.05F has all the considerations that the township is to go through to determine what the effect is. And while Mr. Weldon has indicated that it's any tree that has to be removed has to be replaced, that is not true. It's a regulated tree that has specific consequences that has to be replaced. It's not every tree. It's not even every tree on the property. It's only those that are specifically regulated and defined in the ordinance, which have a specific diameter and or are of a specific valuable species.
The ordinance doesn't make any distinction between abatement efforts such as this drainage issue, does it?
I would like to address something that Mr. Shapiro said, and that is that Mr. Paulson, the owner of FP Development, requested the township to take care of this drain. That's not true. The township doesn't own the drain. It's a county drain, and the township doesn't have any jurisdiction over it.
But my point is that there's a positive externality from removing the tree to deal with the drainage issue, and my understanding is that the ordinance will fine for that for those trees removed as well. Is that not correct?
Well, it could if they are regulated trees. If there's
What's the government rationale for fining for removal of trees that prevent drainage?
Well, because the tree has other benefits itself that inure to the benefit of the entire community and not just that property owner.
But it's automatic if the tree meets whatever the requirement is in the ordinance, it has to be replaced or you have to pay for it.
Right, and that is the individualized assessment.
How is that an individualized assessment?
Well, it's looking at the specific tree. And it's deciding whether or not that tree's removal will cause some impairment of the benefits that the trees are required to.
But if it's a certain size or a landmark tree and I remove it, I'm going to have to replace it, right? Are you saying that there are some landmark trees that I could replace because it's necessary to, you know, stop flooding on my property, and I wouldn't have to report. The county could say you don't have to pay for that one?
Well, they could, yes.
Under what? Where?
Well, you said the county. The county is the owner of the drain. The township regulates the.
Okay. Well, I'm not trying to be cute.
No, and I wasn't either.
Case.
Your Honor.
So I mean, if that's your answer, that's your answer.
I didn't know if that was a misnomer.
So will you allow me?
No,
time
of course,
is up.
Yes.
So I guess you're trying to draw a distinction between the town's interest and the county's interest on this property.
With respect to the drain, yes.
And you would say that the town could have an interest in keeping the trees, blocking the drainage, notwithstanding that the county has an interest that it would want the trees removed.
No. The county has superior jurisdiction. It's their drain. They decide what happens.
So if there's an interest to be considered here, it's actually the interest that wants the tree removed, which would be the county's interest.
Well, yeah, but that wasn't the entire removal of there was not just one tree removed here.
So a portion of your ordinance is fining for trees that the county policy would say should be removed.
No, that's not true. There's no fine here. This is a fee. It's a tree mitigation because, as I indicated, there are other benefits that those trees, even if they're blocking a drain, there are other benefits those trees provide to the community at large as well as the property owner that the township seeks to mitigate.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, all of you, for your arguments this morning. We do appreciate them. The case will be submitted, and you may call the next case.